Good morning, everybody. Very good. Everyone's awake, even though you lost an hour of sleep last night. Yes, I was watching a movie last night, and I looked at my phone, and it was 10 o'clock. Usually, I go to bed around 10, 30, 11 o'clock. And then I realized it really is 11 o'clock, so I better stop watching this and go to bed. So I did. And I have some really good news for you guys. as you know, I love my sunshine. I love the warmer weather. I love just everything. And the best part of the spring here in Spokane is, I'll say, when everything's like highs in the 30s, oh, I can't wait till we get to the 40s. And then we'll hit the 40s or normal. Oh, I can't wait till we get to the 50s. So we've been pretty much 30s to 40s. And by next weekend, we may skip past the 50s and go into the 60s. And so I am thrilled with that. It means that summer is on the way. We still may have some grapple here and there, but I should not have to fire up the snowblower anymore. In fact, I'm going to winterize it. And usually that means you get 4 to 5 inches of snow. How many of you here, were here last week? We started a story out of the book of Esther. But first of all, we need to start with why I'm teaching that at this time of year. In Leviticus chapter 23, verse 4. It says, "These are the Lord's appointed festivals, the sacred assemblies you are to proclaim at their appointed time." So God gave the Jews sacred assemblies that they were supposed to keep every single year. If you go to Walmart, you know what holiday is coming up, even if it's 2 months away. You know by the decorations that they have. We were in Walmart yesterday, and everything was green. Shamrocks and hats and all this. And there are certain traditions that we keep here in the United States. And every year, we do them. Whether you participate in them or not, they are a yearly thing. And most of our holidays, well, a lot of our holidays have to do with being in memorial of something, like Veterans Day or Memorial Day. It means that we don't forget those who have served our country, those people who have gave the utmost payment so that we could be free. That's why we remember those things on a yearly basis. Well, God gave the Jews certain days and certain festivals that they were to keep so that they would not forget what God had done for them in the past. Those are the appointed festivals. In the Hebrew, it is Moedim. The Moedim. And there are seven that God gave to his people, the Jews. Starts with Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of First Fruits, Pentecost or Shavuot, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Those were the seven that he gave and says, don't forget. Make sure you celebrate these things and pass them down to your children so that they know how God has delivered their ancestors in the past. And there are actually three of those that are called the high holidays, and God required that every male who was capable traveled to Jerusalem to celebrate these three high holidays and gather together with the nation of Israel. And there are some other holidays, and this is one that we are going to take a look at today, that are considered minor holidays. They're not designated by God or given by God, but they were brought up by the people who went through an incredible event in the history of the Jews, and sometimes they would develop a holiday or make a decree and say, hey, we need to celebrate this yearly so we don't forget. And the one that we're looking at today is Purim. Purim, P-U-R-I-M. You can also hear it, sometimes it's pronounced Purim. But it is considered a minor holy day. And in the synagogue during Purim, the book of Esther is read. Now, the main characters in the book of Esther are Esther, of course, and her uncle Mordecai. They're the good guys in the story. And they read in the synagogue during Purim the book out loud. And every time that Mordecai's name is mentioned, everybody cheers. Now, there's a bad guy in the story as well, and his name is Haman. And whenever his name is mentioned during the reading in the synagogue, they boo. Or they have these ratchet-sounding noisemakers called a grogger, and they make noise because they're trying to drown out the name of Haman because of what he tried to do to the Jewish people. The book of Esther is a prophetic story of anti-Semitism, one that has been repeated throughout the centuries, and one that is still going on today. There are four commands that are given on how to celebrate. One is that you have to hear the book of Esther. The second one is giving money to the needy. The third one is you send food of gifts to friends. And the final one is it's a party. It is a joyous occasion. God delivered the Jews out of the hands of this evil man. And sometimes they wear costumes. They eat a lot of fried food. There's one that's very popular. It's a triangle. And it represents Haman's ear, which is weird. But it is a fried treat. So there's a lot of drinking, a lot of festivities. And so we're going to take a look, a little bit of a background. For those of you who are not familiar with it, the Medo-Persian king back then was Xerxes, and he ruled over 127 provinces. He was a big, big dude. Now, the Persian Empire was going through a time of peace, so he invited all his military people, the princes and the nobles, to take part in a 180-day banquet. This was a party. And evidently, Xerxes didn't get enough partying at the end of 180 days because he had another special party in his palace for 7 days for a select few of his friends. And his queen was named Vashti, and she had a party at the same time in the palace in a different wing. Well, there was 7 days of drinking and festivities, and Xerxes got a little hammered. And so he, on the last day, he wants to show his wife off to his friends. And so he summons Vashti to come in so that they can see how beautiful she is. Well, Vashti had no desire to go and prance around in front of a bunch of drunk dudes. And so she refused. She refused the king's request. And the king is humiliated in front of his bros. And so he gathers his nobles together and he says, "What should we do about Queen Vashti?" They have a powwow, and one guy says, "You know what? We need to banish her. She's no longer to be a queen. Because if the women who live in the provinces outside of Susa where they lived, if they hear how Queen Vashti had dishonored her husband and nothing was done to her, then all the women in all the provinces are not going to listen to their husband." So they made a decree and said, "She shall be banned, and what we're going to do is we're going to find a replacement for her." And so they go out and they put this big announcement that the king is looking for a new queen. So they brought in the most beautiful virgins throughout all of the provinces, so that the king could choose his next queen. Esther enters the story here because it says that she was very beautiful. So she is one that is brought into the palace along with a lot of other women, and she gains favor with the people that are in charge of this harem, this group of women. And she is given 7 attendants, and in order to go before the king, a woman had to go through 12 months of beauty treatments. 12 months of facials, 12 months of mani-pedis. I mean, they had to be ready to be presented to the king. And so she never mentioned to anyone that she was a Jew. Okay? Now, we're going to pick it up in Esther chapter 2, verses 5 through 7. Now, there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, among those taken captive with the Jehoiachin, king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin who named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. The young woman, who was also known as Esther, had a lovely figure and was beautiful, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. Okay? So we've established what's going on. We've established the premise of the story. So now we are introduced to a man in chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. It says, after these events... Actually, we need to back up, because Mordecai does King Xerxes a huge solid. Mordecai would go to the palace and stand outside the palace hoping to see Esther every once in a while. And if he didn't get to see her, he would inquire, how's she doing? How's she doing? And one day he overhears the palace guards plotting to kill or assassinate the king. And so he tells Esther, let the king know that these two guys are going to try to assassinate him. So she goes and has the information passed on to King Xerxes and gives the credit to Mordecai. So Xerxes looks into it, finds out, yeah, they were going to assassinate me. And so he has them impaled on poles. That was a big thing to do back then. They just stuck you on a pole. Yeah. Yeah. And they usually did it on tall poles so that everyone in the area could see this is what happens when you plot to assassinate the king. So it might be a good idea not to do that. I can't imagine the agony of being stuck on a pole. And you can imagine where it goes in. No? You can't imagine that? Yeah. Not good. All right, so we're going to pick it up in chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. So he is his right-hand man. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. He had the power as the king's right man to kill Mordecai. He had that power. All he had to do was ask permission, and it would have been done. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing just Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the entire kingdom of Xerxes. He doesn't want just Mordecai. He wants all the Jews killed. He wants all of them annihilated. So in verse 7, it says, in the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month, the month of Nisan, the Pur, P-U-R, that's what Lot means. So when they're celebrating Purim, it is the feast of lots. So they're casting a lot, and it was cast in the presence of Haman to select a day and a month. So what they're doing is they're casting lots to find out, to set up a day when it would be okay to annihilate the Jews. So they cast a lot, and then it falls on certain month, certain day. And in verse 13, it says, the dispatchers were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with in the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all of the Jews. Young men, young and old, women and children, on a single day in the 13th of the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. So if you took part in killing all of the Jews, whoever you killed, you got their stuff. It was an enticement to get a lot more people to kill these Jews. All right? So Mordecai goes into mourning, and he's in sackcloth, and Esther sees him in mourning, and she's like, what's going on? So he sends information to her and a copy of the edict that went out and explained that they are going to be annihilated and that you need to go in and talk to the king. So she sends back her response and says, I can't go to the king unless I am summoned. Because if you show up before the king and he is not pleased with you or he's in a bad mood, it is a penalty of death. She couldn't do that because it might mean her losing her own life. So he responds to her and says, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you are alone, you alone of all the Jews will escape. This is chapter 4, verse 13. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. So then Esther sends a reply to Mordecai, go, gather together all of the Jews who are in Susa, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, days, night, or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do, and when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. If I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went in and did what she had instructed. All right, so in chapter 5, we're going to pick it up in 1 through 4. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. The king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. And when he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Then the king asked, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be given to you. If it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him. So at the banquet, the king asks Esther, and Haman is there. They're the only ones there. They show up to the banquet, and the king goes, what is your request, Esther? And she says, I request that you come tomorrow to another banquet. She says, if it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king together with Haman come today to a banquet I have prepared. And Esther, chapter 5, verses 9 through 14, it says, Haman went out that day and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. Calling together his friends Zeresh, his wife, Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, and all the ways the king had honored him and how he had elevated him above the nobles and officials. And that's not all, Haman added. I am the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave. and she has invited me along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. He's got everything he could ever possibly want. Yet he focuses on the only person who's not willing to bow down or give him honor. His wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Have a pole set up, reaching to the height of 50 cubits, and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai impaled on it. Then go with the king to the banquet and enjoy yourself." This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the pole set up. 50 cubits is 75 feet. These are probably 25 feet to the top of these ceilings, probably, would be my guess. Rick? 20? Okay, 20. If they were 25, it would have been three times higher than this. Because I don't want to figure out the math with just 20 into 75. That's how high this pole was. So in order to impale someone that high, you had to build scaffolding so that you could get up to it. Because they don't impale you like this and then tip the pole up. They drop you on top of it. That's how high. He wanted everyone to see Mordecai on the top of that pole. In Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 22 and 23, it says, "Now if a person has committed a sin carrying a sentence of death, and he is put to death, you hang him on a tree. His body is not to be left overnight on the tree, but you shall certainly bury him on the same day. For he who is hanged is cursed of God." His message was to the Jews that Mordecai is a cursed man and deserved to be impaled. Almost saying, if he's hanging on a tree, God, your God must have judged him and he has been cursed. It's interesting that that's how Jesus was crucified. They hung him on a cross. They nailed him to that cross. And it was to let people know that he had been cursed. Because when he was on the cross, what did he do? He was dying for our sins. He took on all the sins of everyone who has ever taken a breath, and he was cursed and hung on a tree. And that message goes all the way back to Deuteronomy. All the way back to Deuteronomy. All right, so we're going to pick it up in Esther chapter 6. "That night the king could not sleep," King Xerxes. "So he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. It was found recorded that Mordecai had exposed Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this?" the king asked. "Nothing has been done for him," his attendants answered. So King Xerxes does what he always does when he wants to know what he should do. He consults his advisors and asks if there are any advisors that are near. The only one that was near is Haman. So he summons Haman and brings him in. And he said in verse 6, "When Haman entered, the king asked him, 'What should be done for the man the king delights to honor?' Now Haman thought to himself, being Haman, 'Who is there that the king would rather honor than me?' So he answered the king, 'For the man the king delights to honor, have them bring royal robe the king has worn, and a horse the king has ridden, one with a royal crest placed on its head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on the horse through the cities, proclaiming before him, 'This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor.'" He's thinking he's going to be riding a horse. And the king says, "Go at once." The king commanded Haman, "Get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested, for Mordecai the Jew. I wish I could see his face. Who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have recommended. So Haman got the robe and the horse, and he robed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor." So after this, Haman goes home humiliated, and then he is summoned to the banquet with the king and with Queen Esther. And while they're at the banquet, the king asks, "What is your petition? What is your request?" In chapter 7, verse 3, we pick it up. Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, your majesty, and if it pleases you, grant me my life. This is my petition. And spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet because no distress would justify disturbing the king." So King Xerxes asks Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is he? The man who has dared to do such a thing?" And Esther said, "An adversary and enemy, this vile Haman." They're sitting in this banquet, and she says, "It's that guy right there." And Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. Can you imagine being in that room? And all of this right after he had to be humiliated, prancing Mordecai through the city, the man he hated the most. And now the plot has been revealed. Xerxes was so angry that he left the room. And Haman knew his only chance to save his life was to throw himself on the mercy of Queen Esther. In doing so, he approached her, and she was laying down on a couch, and he tripped, and he fell on top of her, laying on the couch. At that time, King Xerxes comes through the door and sees Mordecai laying on his wife. And he's not very happy. He's not very happy. He accused him of trying to molest the queen in his own house. In Esther chapter 7, verses 9 to 10, then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, "A pole reaching to the height of 50 cubits stands by Haman's house. He had it set up for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king." And the king said, "Impale him on it." So they impaled Haman on the pole that he had set up for Mordecai, and the king's fury subsided. This guy builds a pole. He's going to put Mordecai on it. Instead, he builds the pole for himself. Don't mess with God's anointed. It's not going to end well. It is not going to end well. In chapter 8, verse 1, that same day King Xerxes gave Queen Esther the estate of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came into the presence of the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. The king took off his signet ring, which he had reclaimed from Haman, and presented it to Mordecai, and Esther appointed him over Haman's estate. Wow. Verse 5, "If it pleases the king," she said, "if he regards me with favor and thinks it the right thing to do, and if he is pleased with me, let an order be written overruling the dispatches that Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, devised and wrote to destroy the Jews in all the king's provinces." And so Xerxes responds in verse 8, "Now write another decree in the king's name in behalf of the Jews, as seems best to you, and seal it with the king's signet ring. For no document written in the king's name and sealed with this ring can be revoked." So he says, "I can't revoke that edict on having the Jews annihilated. And so he comes up with this. And the king's edict granted the Jews in every city the right to assemble and to protect themselves, to destroy, kill, and annihilate the armed men of any nationality or province who might attack them and their women and children, and to plunder their property of their enemies. The day appointed for the Jews to do this and all the provinces of King Xerxes was the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar. So basically, he gave them the right to fight back. He gave them the right to protect themselves and to protect their goods and their homes. So, in chapter 9, on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the edict commanded by the king was to be carried out. On this day, the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, but now the tables were turned and the Jews got the upper hand over those who hated them. The Jews assembled in their cities in all the provinces of King Xerxes to attack those determined to destroy them. No one could stand against them because the people of all other nationalities were afraid of them. And all the nobles of the provinces, and the satraps, the governors, and the king's administrators helped the Jews because fear of Mordecai had seized them. So all the nobles in Susa had seen Mordecai elevated to second in command, taken Haman's place, and seen Haman, he's probably still on the pole. And so all the governors, all the rulers of the different provinces, they actually gathered together to help the Jews protect themselves. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. In verse 12, it says, the king said to Esther, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman in the citadel of Susa. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your petition? It will be given to you. What is your request? It will also be granted. If it pleases the king, Esther answered, give the Jews in Susa permission to carry out this day's edict tomorrow also, and let Haman's 10 sons be impaled on poles. Ooh, Esther's, she's got some fire in her. So the king commanded that this be done, and edict was issued in Susa, and they impaled the 10 sons of Haman. Do not touch God's anointed. Verse 16, meanwhile, the remainder of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also assembled to protect themselves and get relief from their enemies. They killed 75,000 of them, but did not lay hands on the plunder. This happened on the 13th day of the month. The 14th day, they rested and made it a day of feasting and joy. In verse 20, I'm going to have the music ministry team come up. Y'all going to get home a little earlier today? You're welcome. Chapter 9, verses 20 through 22. Mordecai recorded these events, and he sent letters to all the Jews throughout the provinces of King Xerxes, near and far, to have them celebrate annually the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar, as the time when the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month when their sorrow was turned into joy and their mourning into a day of celebration. He wrote them to observe the days as days of feasting and joy and giving presents of food to one another and gifts to the poor. In verse 28, it says, these days should be remembered and observed in every generation by every family and in every province and in every city. And these days of Purim should never fail to be celebrated by the Jews, nor should the memory of these days die out among their descendants. That is what the minor holy day of Purim is all about. It is all about God protecting his people in miraculous situations. I could imagine that Mordecai, when they started rounding up all the women and they showed up and they took Esther to be in the palace, that would probably have been a very difficult day for Mordecai, her uncle, who was basically her father. I know that I would probably have a really hard time if Jay Inslee showed up and took my daughters to Olympia. I might have a little problem with that. No, I'd have a big problem with that. My grandkids would probably be visiting Papa in jail. And I don't look good in orange. Actually, really, nobody does. But it is a time when God, through His providence, knew what had to happen. It had to happen that Esther was taken from her uncle and put into the palace. It had to happen because he needed a Jew who could petition the king. So you see God's hand moving all of the pieces. He knew what had to happen. He did it. When in our own lives, we don't understand sometimes what we're going through. God does. He knows the beginning from the end. And He will do what He wants to do, even if we don't like it. God will put certain people in your lives, and Joy Painter and I like to call them EGRs, extra grace required. Some people are easy to get along with. Some people, not so much. But God puts those people in our lives so that we can learn to be more like His Son. Amen? God will send trials and tribulations your way. Why? Because it's through them that we grow. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but when everything's going perfect in your life and everything's just right and just fine, that's when we have a tendency to get a little lazy in our relationship with God. It is amazing how many lukewarm Christians become hot when things get really sticky. All of a sudden, they're in prayer mode. They're going to God. Lord, I pray this. I pray You take this from me. I pray this. I pray. And usually when He delivers, they go back to being lukewarm again. God doesn't want us lukewarm. He wants a relationship with us in the good times and the bad times. He wants us to look to Him in all things. Everywhere we go, we are to represent Him because He has a plan for each and every one of you. I know the plans that I have for you, He says in Jeremiah. Plans to prosper you. Plans not to harm you. But those are His plans. Oftentimes our plans and His plans clash. Because it's easier to do just what we want. But we have a God who loves us more than a father ever could, more than a mother ever could. And He knows what's best for us. And He knows the beginning from the end. We need to make sure that we are mindful of that and seek Him in everything. Because you are one of the chess pieces. We all are. And He knows what He's doing. Like I said before, He had to put Esther in the presence of the king somehow because He knew there was a dirty bugger named Haman coming along that wanted to annihilate the Jews. He also knew another dirty bugger was going to come along named Adolf Hitler. And there are going to be other dirty buggers that come along. The final one being the Antichrist. But you know what? There ain't nothing that goes on in this world where God's going, "Ooh, I didn't see that coming. What am I going to do?" No, He knows. He's setting those things. He's setting the pieces in place. And those pieces are his people, the Jews and the believing Gentiles. If you're a believer, you are one of those pieces. And don't fight against him when he tries to pick you up and move you to the next spot. You see, we get to a certain spot, and it's like, ooh, I kind of like this spot. This is a comfortable spot. And God says, no, I need you to move over here. Yeah, but that looks dangerous. And he says, yeah, I know. Does anybody hate flying? Flying on an airplane? Just absolutely terrified? I used to be that way. Until I came to the conclusion, if I am in his will, there ain't no way that plane's going down unless it's his will. If I am in God's will, I am invincible until he says it's my time. If I'm outside of God's will, I am outside of his protection, you're taking your chances. But inside his will, and when I pray, when it's starting to taxi, I'm like, okay, Lord, if it's my time, it's my time. I'll probably be one of those, if we're going down, that jumps up and says, anybody here not know God? Because now is a really good time for me to introduce him to you. When we trust our lives with him, you either do or you don't. There's no, oh, I trust him with this, but I don't trust him with this. Newsflash, he's a pretty big God. And he knows everything. And he's smarter than you. I don't care how smart you are, he's smarter than you. Stephen Hawking thought he was smarter than God. Stephen Hawking didn't believe in God. Stephen Hawking now knows that there is a God. And I pray that with his last breath, he accepted him. God knows the hairs on your head. God knows the days of your life. My advice to you is walk in his ways, because you're invincible until he says, time to go home. And you know what? Paul said, to be absent in the body is to be present with the Lord. I've had so many older Christians say, I don't know why I'm here. I just want to go home. I just want to go home. I'm done with this life. And I says, did you take a breath this morning when you got out of bed? Yes. Well, then it's not your time. It's not your time. Little Miss Dorothy just passed away, 103, prayer warrior. And she wanted to go home. And God wasn't going to take her until she was done. She got to where she couldn't really speak, and you know what? God can still use Dorothy, even if she can't speak. We don't know what's going on in the spirit realm. Well, I do. She was still praying for people. And he didn't want to take a prayer warrior out. Because, another news flash, there's not a lot of them around. We need those prayer warriors. We need them.